Luciano Pavarotti is 69 years old and counting. He has said that when he passes through the portal of 70, nearly a year from now, he will retire from the stage and from singing altogether. For much of the world, a silent Pavarotti would be a tragedy of operatic proportion. The voice teacher who became arguably the most beautiful tenor of the second half of the 20th century has been the most popular opera star of our time. But for some, not hearing Mr. Pavarotti won't be such a bad thing. Critics have complained that he has already sung too long. Still others who've lived or worked with him over these past four decades, quite frankly, could use the rest. Mr. Pavarotti will teach again in his hometown of Modena, Italy. And there is yet another footnote to his career, a new book called The King and I, written by his former agent Herbert Breslin and Anne Migette. They join us from our studios in New York City. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, the book begins, Mr. Breslin, with you basically in charge of public relations for two superstar tenors who've just burst on the scene, Placido Domingo and Luciano Pavarotti. And I gather you found that that was maybe a little too much.
You know, the funny thing is, they both made their debut at the Metropolitan Opera the same year, 1968. And as far as I'm concerned, it was just wonderful, except I think the two of them found it a bit much that I would represent both of them at the same time. Because if I got a story for Luciano, the next thing I would hear is Placido would pop up and say, well, how come you got that for him and not for me, and vice versa. So it was a battle, and the decision that I made to no longer work for Placido had nothing to do with the fact that I couldn't do anything for him, but the fact that I had asked Luciano if, in just doing his public relations, if I could become his manager, and he agreed. So I figured that that was a much greater challenge than simply being a public relations person. And Placido had another manager already.
Anne Migette, you've written a lot of opera criticism, I understand, and have written about opera. Can you tell us what it was that Pavarotti had in the late 60s and early 70s that made him so special?
There's just an excitement to the sound. Pavarotti himself will often say he has an unmistakable sound, but it's true that you hear a Pavarotti recording and you immediately know it's Pavarotti. Even if you don't know opera that well, you can hear the quality of the voice.
The sort of brightness that his voice has.
There's a brightness to it. There's also a very legato quality, a wonderful lissom quality, a softness to it. There's a seductive sensuousness to the voice. That's actually the aria that they picked when he made his movie Yes, Giorgio, the Cielo e Mar from Ponchielli's Gioconda, that was supposed to be his big turn-on to women, that he would always say, oh, I'm singing that one for you, because the women in the movie are sort of falling over whenever he sings that aria.
That aspect of Luciano's singing is very important because Luciano was able to direct his singing right between the eyes of everybody who was listening to him, and he made them all feel that he was singing it right for them.
Mr. Breslin, you talk in the book about how Pavarotti had a wonderful memory for notes, that he could get what I will inelegantly call the tune, but not the words.
He didn't fake the words when he sang an aria, but it took him a long time to get those into his head, while the music came very easily to him. Not that he read music, but he had a great ear for listening, and he could, and that's the way he learned parts. He would listen to the music and listen and listen and listen until he got the thing into his head perfectly. And then, but the words came later on.
And sometimes the secretary would be holding them up in the wings to help him out.
Do you think that Pavarotti was basically just gifted by God with an enormously beautiful voice and a sort of capacity to project it? Was he an instinctive performer? Was
Definitely. He more than a trained performer? Well, he had training, too, but, I mean, it was Herbert von Karajan who said his vocal cords were kissed by God. But he did have a terrific instinct for the music and for the performance, and that's what really pushed him over the top.
And an instinct for how to put himself forward, too,
that's
as a person and a personality, which certainly didn't hurt.
Mr. Breslin, the issue of retirement had a good deal to do with the end of your professional relationship with Pavarotti, didn't it? The question of whether he was able to go on, able to do the kinds of things he had done before.
Well, but you know, that's true to a point. But Linda, when you've worked for somebody as closely as Luciano and I worked together for 36 years, that's a very long time. But I wanted to breathe a little bit. Opera singers, classical artists, pianists, fiddlers, whatever you want to call them, they are difficult. And fortunately, I mean, I have a temperament that can cope with problems and still come out halfway alive.
One of the funniest stories that I found in the book was a story of a woman named Sissy who was commiserating with Pavarotti about weight.
Luciano was always on various diets trying to lose weight, and his secretaries were always putting him on diets, and he was very consumed with the idea of losing weight. And he was in his dressing room at the Metropolitan Opera one evening, and Sissy Strauss, who's the artistic liaison at the Met, I believe, came in and asked Luciano how he was feeling. And Luciano said, "Oh, I'm feeling terrible. I've gained 10 pounds and I can't get it off." 10 pounds, of course, being Luciano's version of how much weight he had gained. And Sissy said, "Oh, I know how you feel. I've gone on a SlimFast diet because I'm trying to lose some weight." And Luciano said, "Oh, no, no, no. SlimFast is terrible, terrible. You must be on my diet. If you were on my diet, you wouldn't look like that." Which I'm quite sure is true.
This from a man who looked like more than one man.
I believe
maybe two or three men.
I believe that he was topless at the time he gave this injunction. And Sissy, who is a very trim woman, was hearing from him that she needed to follow his eating plan.
If you look back at the body of work that Pavarotti did while you were working with him, Mr. Breslin, Anne Migette, and all the research you've been doing, which are the moments of Pavarotti that you think will survive into the next century, maybe even past that?
I think the great bel canto roles, a lot of the things he recorded with Joan Sutherland. And I think a lot of his aria compilations, I mean, I think he made an effect on the opera world and penetrated the popular consciousness in a way that not many singers have done recently, and that will remain. There's an awareness of him that's not going to die overnight.
There's no question about that, but he also did a great deal as far as the profession is concerned, because when Luciano came on the scene, the opera world was pretty much controlled by the ladies, who were selling out the house where the men didn't stand a chance. And suddenly he came around and he switched everything around to where the men took control. And the women took a secondary position.
La donna è mobile, qual piuma al vento, muta d'accento e di pensiero.
When he sang, he was able to communicate more than just a singing. He was able to communicate an emotional impact, and that is a quality that is all too absent in many of the singers singing today.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Herbert Breslin and Anne Migette, their book is called The King and I, the uncensored tale of Luciano Pavarotti's rise to fame by his manager, friend, and sometime adversary. For more of the music of Luciano Pavarotti, visit our website at npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.